Yes Man is about a guy who just decides to agree to everything that comes before him. I assume it's a true story based on the life of whatever producer gave this movie a green light. Because he says yes to everything. See, that's the only explanation. Anyway, it was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
I'm just saying, I don't know why this exists. I'm leading with that.
You did research on that.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. It's just like a typical...
Yeah.
It's just trope-filled, and I mean, there's nothing remarkable about it at all.
That was Camila Adams. Before that was Robin Hitchcock.
Hello.
I forgot about our introductions.
They're two pirates who are just trying to get by, man. They don't care about curses and love triangles. They just want a pirate a little bit. I'm Sean Collier. Yeah, we talked about Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl last time. We gave it an 82. We liked it. That's the same score as Empire Records and Mary Poppins. Fashion triple feature. Does not approach the top 10, by the way. You need to beat Speed at an 87.67. If Speed falls below an 87, you get it. But yeah, Yes Man, this is my fault. What did I veto? I vetoed Rampage with Dwayne Johnson.
I enjoyed this more than I would have enjoyed Rampage.
I had seen Rampage and I hadn't seen this, so okay. In my, you know, quest to see
everything.
Not everything. But new things.
It's
2008.
I really believed for most of this movie's runtime that it was from like 2003. And then eventually they played some song where I was like, wait a second. And then like pulled up IMDb and I was like, huh.
With 2008, there is truly no way to know if I've seen this because that's before I started really reviewing, right? And nothing in this movie is designed to stick in your brain.
Right.
But it all feels familiar because of all those tropes. So throughout, I was like, yeah, I remember this. Do I?
Yeah.
I couldn't remember if I'd seen it before. And like, I was getting ready to watch it the other night. And Dan was like, oh, and I was trying to tell him what it was about. He's like, oh, yeah, I saw that. You made me watch. And I was like, no, no, I didn't. First of all, I don't think that I've seen it. Secondly, this is not a movie I would have made you watch. He's like, no, I'm pretty sure. It's like, no. Also, this came out 2008. We met like right then in 2008. I would not have opened up with this.
You know what we should do?
Colin and I also met in 2008. Why are our relationships so weirdly parallel?
It's crazy.
Mine began 8 years later, so you two can have that. I don't know. It's a movie. Should we talk about Jaws or Seven or some other movie that we care about?
I mean, I have things to say about Yes and culture. And
okay.
Okay.
I have things to say about rape culture, and that's it. That's what I gotta say.
This is the inverse of the French Lieutenant's Woman episode, where it's still only you that has anything, only they're not enthusiastic. They're just kind of resigned.
Yes, very resigned.
And hey, kick it off by telling people what happens in the movie Yes Man, as if they can't guess.
Go.
Jim Carrey's Carl is a divorced sad sack until he attends an obvious cult scam of a seminar about the power of saying yes and enters a covenant with the universe to say yes to every opportunity. Whenever Carl says yes, something happens that's great, like a meet cute with Zoe Deschanel or being able to save Luis Guzman from suicide with a Third Eye Blind sing-along. Whenever he says no, he suffers physical comedy mishaps because I guess his magical thinking affects his balance. Yes, they address the obvious problem, Ray consenting to sex. No, they do not address it well. The feds think Carl is a terrorist, but believe his buddy Bradley Cooper that this is about the covenant, and then Zoe wants to break up because he didn't really want to do all these things together, especially agree to move in with her. Carl's ex-wife wants to bone. He says no and sticks by it despite physical comedy peril. Then he gets in an accident with the guru, and then is told what a metaphor is. Carl now understands that he can have personal boundaries while still being obnoxious and self-righteous. And so he gets back together with Zoe to become the couple you desperately hope is not sitting at your table at a wedding because you know they won't shut up about their rollerblade luge adventures.
Four seconds over.
Okay, yes.
Not terrible. Thanks for clearing it up. I thought that was Bradley Cooper's fiance that he said no to.
I'm actually now doubting myself. Because she starts giving him the eyes at some point in this movie.
It's definitely his ex-wife.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Because I have to admit, this is one of those movies where it was a chore to pay attention.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was... like, I put my phone in a different part of the room.
I had to put it in a freezer bag.
I literally was like, you are going to the faraway table? And I, like, really tried to, like, I was like, I know I'm keeping the plot summary, so I'm, like, going to keep notes and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's boring as hell. And like you said, like, it feels like you've already seen it, but didn't like it. It's right. Just a mess. What a bad movie.
Especially when I wrote down... is this building to a breakup because she feels like he's only with her because of the yes cult and then they get back together because dumb. And then that's the whole that's like the last 40 minutes of the movie.
Yeah. Oh my God. You're right. The pacing is very off. Mm-hmm. That might be also my perception because I was so bored. Ugh.
Yeah.
I don't even know. Yeah. I guess we facts.
Yeah.
Well,
anything interesting in there?
No, absolutely not. In true, let's get the unpleasantness out of the way fashion.
Facts should just be trivia about Canada,
which is fun. But yeah, this movie might be above water just on being like kind of funny, and most of the people in it are good. And I feel like the old lady blowjob sequence loses like 20 to 30 points off of whatever, because it's gross.
I don't just mean I'm not saying old people having sex is gross. No. Old people, please bone.
Do your thing.
Yeah, bone as long as you can.
You can go as far as to say any sex scene involving dentures is probably gross.
But I would prefer not to think about the particulars of it.
Right.
And much more importantly, it's basically rape.
Yeah.
Like, he is not actually consenting to this.
No.
And the idea that might as well consent to sex you're unsure of because it could be really good is profoundly upsetting to me.
Not to mention the Persian wife finder.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
Which is also...
and then what happens to her? Like, She shows up on screen once.
She has not given a payoff. It would have been
she at the party.
She's at the party, yeah. But it would have been the easiest thing in the world to have her get together with
his boss.
His boss. His boss got together with
the Korean woman.
The thing I didn't really get into in my plot summary, which I tried to in one draft of it, but it was too long, was that, like, it's not just that fortuitous things happen to him. He's also given this ability to pay things, or, like, he sees paying forward a lot. Mm-hmm. So, like, the party that we just referred to, he... says yes to throwing a bridal shower for Bradley Cooper's fiance.
Yeah.
And then fails to plan it.
Right.
But is able to plan it immediately because so many people owe him fixing their life through various coincidences to things he said yes to. See, this is why it wasn't in the plot summary. It's incredibly convoluted.
It is.
But it's a little George Bailey element that should have been maybe heartwarming.
Mm-hmm.
And my heart remained frosty.
Well, I feel like there were too many instances where, like, he was saying yes to things he wasn't asked to do.
Right. Like, right. There's a real question about how direct it needs to be. But right. I guess
a junk email should not count.
Right.
Right.
By any stretch.
Exactly.
Like, I guess that's the thing where this movie's decision, I think it was when we were on mic last week about, you know, is this a mystical cause? No, it is not a mystical cause.
It could have used a mystical cause.
And that's the thing, is that these conversations about, well, this doesn't really count, I guess is just moot because it counts whenever he wants it to count. And then the problem is that he doesn't realize that means he doesn't have to have sex with people he doesn't want to have sex with.
when we drew this and I was thinking about it and I started watching it, I thought it was Fun with Dick and Jane, a 2005 Jim Carrey movie. And I was like, oh, the other one. Actually, I just mushed those together in my head and was like, why does he? Oh, this was released December 19th of 2008, the 40th and penultimate number one movie of the year. Everything got 1 week. Nothing got any more. It won its opening weekend with $18.2 million. It beat fellow debuts 7 pounds. Mm. One
kind of the unfunny yes man, like the serious yes man.
Wow. One of the early... Is he on his way out? Movies. Second place, $14.8 million. And The Tale of Despero, third place, $10.1 million.
That's so funny. Real quick, just because you admit that Despero was the number one movie when this movie was out. And while I'm watching this, we are getting another dog. And I was
congratulations.
Thank you. And I was thinking about naming him Despero.
That's a good dog name.
But it's not after the mouse. It's after the Cary Elwes' art thief on the show Psych.
Amazing.
Very good. I was going to ask if you were getting another dog, but some people are like, no, we will not replace our... And I'm like, you should have another dog. No,
I was thinking, like, logistically that we should wait until Kaj was much, much older, but Dan has put together that apparently our dogs were both of our emotional support dogs.
Aww.
So
that's true.
We need another dog.
Yeah. So 1 week, number one movie in America, obviously lost the throne to four debuts over the post-Christmas weekend. The next week, four movies came out. They all beat it in order. Marley and Me, Bedtime Stories, Benjamin Button, and the other words. I forget the whole.
there's a whole thing.
And Valkyrie, which also featured Terrence Stamp. For that, it barely dropped, earning $16.6 million. So it did fall to fifth, but made basically the same amount of money. Just busy Christmas weekend. Spent a month in the top 10, $97.6 million, 30th place for 2008. This is loosely based on a memoir by a British writer named Danny Wallace, who kind of did this for a year. I didn't
that
research.
Makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Remember when people used to do something ridiculous in order to get a book deal, and now they do the same amount of ridiculousness, but only get to make a YouTube video?
I was born too late. I could have done that. I could have done that once a year for my whole life and then retired.
I highly recommend the one where the guy reads the encyclopedia.
Oh, I think I read another one. Maybe I read that one. I did read that one.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah.
There's a movie one. The guy who was the voice of Tom Servo on Mystery Science Theater did one where he just had to go to the movies every day for a year. And
awesome.
It's pretty good.
Easy peasy, lemon squeezy.
he failed. He almost failed once where his wife was, it was just like 9 o'clock and his wife was like, have you been to the movies yet? And he like panicked and ran to the movie theater and then did when they were on vacation in Europe and like had not planned ahead and there just simply was not a movie theater.
Oh,
so
man.
He didn't quite do it.
Okay, that sounds like a skill issue.
Yeah.
Right. Like,
I feel like I could plan that.
There was also some guy who had lived his life directly to the Bible. He had a book.
Same guy as the encyclopedia guy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
See, I want that career. I did not do much research into Danny Wallace's book. The cover claims that, among many other positive and negative things, he won $45,000, earned a nursing degree, and traveled the globe as a result of saying yes.
Good for him.
Good things that Jim Carrey did. He did learn basic Korean. He took like 10 weeks of Korean.
Great.
And,
nice.
Figured out the essentials. And he learned to play the guitar. That was him playing. He never played before or after. And like he said, he was bad at it and didn't want to keep going.
I appreciate that. Mm-hmm.
Genuinely surprised he had never learned. I thought that
he seems like the type of guy who
white
would have
dudes
learned.
In comedy always have a guitar hiding somewhere in their house.
There's always a party. God, the parties. Some dude always brings out a fucking acoustic
guitar.
Does
that still happen now with the youth?
We'd have to ask the Utes.
Yeah.
It feels like it has to.
I'll ask my niece.
Right.
I mean, they talked about it in Barbie, so I mean, it's got to still be
relatable. That's true. Barbie's very much an elder millennial film. Yeah.
That's true. Bad things that Jim Carrey did. He stumbled bumping into the waitress, like, you know, just where he like walks away early on and gets a tray full of drinks on him. And
one of his I say no and therefore physical comedy occurs.
Right. And somehow stumbled and fell so badly that he cracked 3 ribs.
Of hers?
Of his.
Oh.
Like he probably pratfalled too close to the sun.
3 ribs.
Yeah.
Oh God.
It's like
that sucks. Right? I'm glad it was his and not hers.
Right. Yeah. That would have made me feel real bad.
Buddy.
He felt the years between, you know, that and Ace Ventura. I can't just throw yourself on the ground anymore. He did not take that lesson as he insisted on doing the bungee jump himself.
Oh God.
apparently this like held up production because everyone was like, we're not insuring that. We are not insuring you throwing Jim Carrey off a bridge. And like they had to come to some special deal where it was filmed last, like the Tom Cruise stunts, presumably. Oh, so if you die, we still have the film.
We still got some stuff to work with.
Apparently it went well. But he clearly had a stunt double to play Dance Dance Revolution.
Yeah.
It cut. You never like, see his face and feet in the same time in those
that's
shots.
That's where I draw the line, guys. Right. I refuse.
I will learn Korean. I will jump off a bridge, but I can't play that fucking game. The music is original. The music in Munchausen by Proxy is original collaboration between Zooey Deschanel and the band Von Iva. They worked together and wrote those songs on the DVD. I guess there's like a behind the music. They did music videos. Of course. Other better original music by Eels. Eels did both the score, and there were a bunch of Eels songs in there. Jim Carrey won the MTV Movie Award for Best Comedic Performance.
Come on, what?
This
isn't even his most Jim Carrey-ness.
Right.
You can argue any of the other four as being more deserving. Anna Faris in The House Bunny.
Yes.
Steve Carell in Get Smart.
I don't remember that, but probably yes.
James Franco in Pineapple Express.
Probably yes.
And Amy Poehler in Baby Mama. Maybe?
Sure, she puts the breast milk things on her face.
Yeah. I mainly bring this up to mention the MTV Movie Awards might have died.
Finally.
Well, but it's what?
They were happening as recently as 2023. In 2024, they handed out the awards without a ceremony because of the writer's strike. And
wait,
this,
isn't it 2024 I'm
sorry,
right now?
In 2022, it happened. I don't know what year it is. 2022, they happen normally. 2023, weird altered ceremony due to the writer's strike. They announced there will be none this year, and they are hoping to reboot for, like come up with a new fresh one for next year. I wouldn't swear that's going to happen.
Why does MTV even look like now?
Yeah.
Ridiculousness, 24 hours a day. The show Ridiculousness.
Is that an actual show I've never heard of?
Yeah. Didn't we have this conversation or did I hear another podcast having this conversation? Ridiculousness. I could be wrong. I'm pretty sure it's one of those shows where dumb influencer-ish teenagers react to viral videos. And they'll show that in like 18 hour. Yeah. Well, no, but they're like sitting around and watching and making.
Talk soup.
Yeah. I mean, that implies a level of skill that
okay.
I think.
Yeah, I miss Talk Soup.
Like there'll be a Jersey Shore revival every now and then.
Okay.
But yeah, so there's
Jersey Shore in the nursing home.
the AV Club was like, there are no MTV awards, so we are taking it upon ourselves to give Best Kiss to the boys and challengers.
Good job.
Anyway, hopefully that comes back and we'll continue forgetting to watch them. By the way, it has now been 10 years since there was a normal Jim Carrey role. The only things he's done since 2020 are the Sonic the Hedgehog movies, which you can argue
I would say that counts as a normal Jim Carrey role. It's just Jim Carrey.
Yes.
You know, he understands that he has some elder care bills coming in his way.
Yeah. Probably got some kids that are going off to college.
You know, he has to.
I'm not mad he's in them.
In the bank.
He's good. He's good in them. But there hasn't been a thing like this.
Right.
He did a couple of indie movies in 2016. His last big comedy was the Dumb and Dumber sequel that he was in, not the Dumb and Dumber sequel he wasn't in 2014. And that's about when I ran out of facts, other than learning that Jim Carrey is banned from Russia.
What did he have to do that?
Canada supported, you know, Ukraine, and they just arbitrarily put out a list of 100 Canadians who were no longer allowed in Russia. And Jim Carrey was one of them.
Okay,
fine.
Listen, if you're going to be an evil empire, be a little bitch about it.
You signed the UN resolution? Well, no more Jim Carrey. Probably Celine Dion either. I didn't look at the whole list. So that pause is indicative of how much there is to say about this film.
But Tony, why?
Yes, but Tony, why?
Well, all I could find that would be up in there in your timelines was that recently Jeff Daniels talked about how Jim Carrey had to talk him into doing the toilet scene in Dumb and Dumber because he was afraid that that would ruin his career. Jeff. Okay. Also, Bradley Cooper is producing a documentary with PBS about caregiving since he has had to live through like caring for his father, his dying father. I think.
This is what I'm talking about. He gave Jim Carrey a phone call and was like, you gotta take these Sonic roles, buddy.
And lastly, the only reason that I did very much enjoy this movie, now, the only thing in this movie that I enjoyed was the use of my favorite Journey song, Separate Ways, twice. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And in accordance to that, Steve Perry, former lead singer, the original lead singer of Journey, has announced that he's probably going to be going on tour again after like a million years.
With Journey or as Steve Perry?
As Steve Perry.
Okay.
Yep.
He is happy to leave his Filipino doppelganger in Journey because that's been a long time.
Yeah.
That, and also, I assume that his voice can't do what it used to do, and his Filipino doppelganger's voice still.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But he's like doing other things. Like he's re-recorded like at least three of his more famous Journey songs. And like one of them was like Stranger Things, the last one they did. I think it was Separate Ways.
It was Separate Ways.
Yeah. And that seemed to like get like a real resurgence of old Steve and people like paying attention to him because he was like real active on Instagram after that and everything. And there's some other song that I keep seeing that's like that he has re-recorded with somebody and he's very excited about it. But, you know, shout out to Steve Perry.
I know I'm way too opinionated about concert set lists and how they should and should not be arranged. But we went and saw Journey.
With the Filipino, I'm assuming.
Yeah, we didn't pay for the tickets. But we went and saw Journey. And they play Don't Stop Believin' like third.
What?
Yeah. They play something, then they play something else, and then they play Don't Stop Believin'. And you go, so should we just leave?
Was Separate Ways the finale?
Though? No.
Any Way You Want.
Any Way You Want was the finale. Separate Ways was kind of in the middle.
I would have opened with Any Way You Want It.
See, I think that Any Way You Want It is the right third spot, right? Like, you start with, like, Lights or whatever. You do the, like, slow burn opener, right? And then maybe play something new, if they have something new. Something short, peppy new, right? Mm-hmm. And then you go into one of their barn burners. And I sound like I really like Journey right now. And my dear friend and Theronathon co-host, Regina Connolly, makes fun of me for liking Journey, and I'm always like, I don't like Journey. I don't. And it's like the way that my husband pretends he likes Billy Joel. Uh-huh. It's like she pretends I like Journey. And whenever I have actual thoughts or feelings about Journey, especially when they're positive, I am so annoyed. Hi, Regina, I love you.
I mean, they're pretty good. Like, they have a lot of good songs. I don't know if I've ever put on a Journey album, but like
waste of really good hits. Musicians is how I feel about Journey.
I'm mostly here for Steve Perry because I was like real. I really like a lot of his solo stuff.
I love how we have much more to say about Journey. Steve Perry, man. I do want to talk about improv, if that's okay. If we could redirect the film, or do you have more Journey thoughts?
Not this time, but
Here's a typical set list, which starts with, and then Don't Stop Believing is third, and then Lights, and then they burn Lights fourth, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 Touch and Squeezing is 11th, Open Arms and Faithfully 12 and 13, 14, 15, 16th Separate Ways, and Any Way You Want It is 18th. That's too many songs for Journey.
It is
too many songs like for Journey.
They play for like an hour 40, and it's like, no.
No, sir.
Toto already played. Toto played first, a full hour, and I'm like, and they were better. I'm like, okay, come. And improv? Yes, Anne?
Okay. So, for listeners who don't know, I work in improv comedy. I work at Arcade Comedy Theater here in beautiful Pittsburgh, and I run our program of classes. So, I have seen hundreds of people go through improv comedy classes and come out happier people. But a common thing that people know about improv, like one of the things, if you ask some random person on the street, if they know anything about improv, they probably know the words yes and, right? Because fundamentally in improv, what you have to do is you have to agree with the people who you're performing with and you have to contribute built off of what they just said. Now, this gets conflated. I think a lot of people think that that means you say yes to everything. Right? Mm-hmm. Like you'll often see every sitcom has scenes that make fun of improv classes because every sitcom writer has taken an improv class and now feels superior to those people who, those schmucks who they took classes with who didn't make it. And they will often show characters just saying yes to everything, but that's not what it actually is, right? You do often have to train beginning improvisers to lean towards yes, say yes when you, a normal person, might not, as an opportunity for comedy, but it's not just agree to everything. But bad improv teachers teach it that way and try to build a culture around it. And that has led to a lot of sex creeps in the improv world. And it also leads to people saying things like improv is a cult, which I think is deeply cruel and harmful to actual victims of actual cults. And that's my rant.
So there's a real world culture around, like, they leave their class and then are like, okay, you got to continue on with this. Yes, that live is, your life as though.
Because, and it happens because improv is so freeing for people, right? Like, that's why I brought up, like, I've seen so many people's lives improved by this. Because adults don't have chances to play.
Right.
Getting this chance to play makes people feel alive. And it's the same thing. Improv's not a cult, but it's the same thing that happens when you find a cult, right?
Right.
Where you're primed because you've had this activating experience, you're primed for a perception shift. And that perception shift with this handy phrase, yes, and,
right,
can become do what people tell you to do to find joy.
Gotcha. That's sad.
So that made it harder for me to enjoy this movie, is basically what all of that was to say.
I mean, to me, this just says that, like most of the arts, anytime men want to get involved, be very wary of that. keep comedy mostly female spaces. I know that sounds white knighty, but...
you know, for example, Danny Masterson.
Right. Yeah. Thank you for remembering to bring that up, because he's barely in this film. Thank God, I guess.
Yeah, but it's also like, why was he even in this film? He was even before, like, we knew, found out he was a racist or a rapist. Probably. Like,
I mean, come on, let's get it.
Probably, like, yeah. Whatever. He didn't bring anything to the table.
It was like they needed to have another human being there so that he could. And so that Bradley Cooper didn't have too many lines of dialogue, like it truly, or like maybe Bradley Cooper had a restraining order where he needed another person present in the scene. There's no reasonable story justification for Danny Masterson's participation.
Well, and speaking of no reasonable story justification, both of you characters, Bradley Cooper character and Danny Masterson character, just stop hanging out with this guy. Like,
it should have been his brother.
Yeah.
It should have been someone who you can't stop hanging out with.
You can stop hanging out with your brother. Like, anyone who is trying that hard to avoid you after, like, a couple months, you're like, well, fuck it then. Yeah. I don't care.
Like, we're all grown-ups here.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not going to keep pushing this in. And it's just, there was no chemistry between the three of them to make us feel like anybody should be really pushing this friendship. At all.
There was no chemistry in the film. And part of that is the writing. I didn't feel like Jim and Zoe were much of a...
Oh, she seems so bored.
She's 18 years younger than him.
And
she is literally 18 years younger than him.
Yes.
And she just seems like she does not want to be there.
Yeah.
Like, you know, she's one of the, like, typical manic pixie dream girls, but she's so far away, like, as a bipolar person, I'm like, that's not mania.
That's just interests. That's different.
Right. I do want to say, I feel like I got a little bit too harsh and made improv sound worse than it really is. The reason that it changes people's lives and makes people happy is there is something good about doing things that scare you and taking risks and all that stuff. Like, signing up for an improv class is a thing that a lot of people have to push themselves to do. It's something they have to say yes to. So I'm not saying say no.
Well, no. Oh, yeah.
I'm saying don't trust people who tell you not to trust your gut.
I think that a big part of it, and this is true with just about anything you can get involved in, like casually as an adult, is like people find a thing that is an initially positive environment and they go, aha, this is now my whole life. And they're like, I'm going to do this every day and maybe I'm going to go to Chicago and take class. And it's just like, no, it can just be
just a thing you do on the weekend.
You do
John,
every
I'm
now
in
then.
The fucking room.
I will say this is a great business model for a motivational speaker, though.
Yeah.
Yes.
Would you like to buy the next thing?
Yes. Exactly.
You have to say yes.
Was he, when everybody's naked at the end, was that Jim Carrey, like, getting revenge on this guy? I don't get it.
I don't.
Like, was it just not thought through and not just a sight gag?
I just think it was just one of those things like, well, we need clothes. I know where we'll absolutely get a bunch of clothes. We go outside the... We go outside of the seminar.
I see. Okay.
There was one suspiciously attractive butt really close to the camera.
Suspiciously attractive.
Because everyone else was ugly, and then there was this one right here, and I was like, they put that there to make people.
Did they put it to the left of the screen, Jeffrey Rush style?
No, it was on the right. There was a bad butt on the left. The trailer.
It's the first word we learn. And some people...
I'm having a funny hat and or wig party.
Sucks I'm going to be out of town.
You don't know what day it is.
When is it?
Friday.
I'm out of town.
Never grow out of it.
No.
No.
Yeah, no.
No means no.
Hey, want to rock out tonight? Oh, it's you. Let me guess. No?
Yep.
Yes?
No, I meant yes to your no.
But this Christmas...
What was that you said?
Yes.
Yes!
Carl is about to discover...
I do want to take guitar lessons. I do want to learn how to fly. Yes, I would like to learn Korean.
What he's always been missing.
So wait, you can say yes to everything.
Exactly.
I wasn't open to stuff, and now I am. Things are changing for me.
Jim Carrey. Yes, man.
Trailer's good, no complaints.
I really like that it like has a concept behind it.
Yeah.
Like, I was very excited that there was footage not from the film.
I was excited that there wasn't like he falls in love with, you know, like there's no mention of the romance, which is surprising to me.
Yes. Trailer looks way better than the movie that actually exists.
Is that true about kids?
Yes.
Okay. That's what happens. They learn to talk, and then they learn what no is, and then they refuse everything for a year.
I think it's more, for me, like, trying to think of it logically, it's that I think because they hear no so much, obviously that's going to be the first thing that they mimic saying, along with mama and dada. But then, and I think that probably that theory only lasts for like a couple months, and then it's like, oh, yeah, it's like, I need to show you that I am my own person.
They have limited control. So whenever they find any kind of lever of control, they pull it.
Boy, do they.
Yes. Also, my brother, when he was a baby, had a shirt that said, I think my name is No-No, and I will never get. I'm like, great shirt.
Mm-hmm.
One of the best baby joke shirts I've ever seen.
And the letterboxed list is sad white people movies. The description, a film about affluent, healthy, straight white people who are sad about the various crises that people, mostly sad white men, go through in their lives. Mm. And especially because the rules are very well defined. The official rules of this genre, the cast must be predominantly white. The main characters have an odd, quirky job like art gallery manager or dog babysitter. The characters make way more money than they should have and have a much nicer apartment than they deserve. Their sadness stems mostly from internal or domestic issues like ennui, cheating, family deaths, and some sicknesses. The male characters often have a heterosexual love interest that teaches them to live in the moment. A majority of shots are static mediums with little to no movement or background. Lots of establishing helicopter shots of a major American city. The median age of most characters should be somewhere between 22 and 45. If five or more of these criteria are met, you have just watched a sad white people movie.
Jeez.
Holy cow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. His apartment was really nice.
It's a very extensive list. So I don't know a number. Like I said, I think it could go to 65-ish. Like that, like two, like, you know, solidly positive. But and then there's a couple of gross things where I'm gonna land on, I don't know, 46.
Mm.
I say 46. Robin.
30.
I'm gonna say 37. I like that is this Jim, this version of Jim Carrey is somewhere between Liar Liar and The Truman Show.
Yeah.
We're starting to see his growth.
I liked that he got to make some faces again.
I laughed out loud a few times.
I guffawed when he punched the wrong guy in the face. That was good.
Yeah.
37 and two thirds is the score. And it feels like that's about right. Continue to not acknowledge this movie.
Camila nailed it, by the way.
Yes.
Yeah, apparently.
To the bingo card.
We get nothing.
Oh, no, we get some stuff.
Do we?
TV host on screen when they're talking about how he is wanted for terrorism.
Oh, yeah.
Which really labored plot development, by the way, but okay.
That is actually one of the things that made me laugh out loud. I was like, oh, yeah, these are a lot of things that might altogether make you sound like a terrorist. Who directed this?
Peyton something.
Peyton Reed of the Ant-Man movies. But
yes, he did something.
And Bring It On.
Yes, yeah. He had done several things, including Bring It On.
It's already been brought in.
I swore there was another one. I don't recall. Tourist in the movie. They are tourists in Lincoln, Nebraska.
Yes!
Oh, awesome.
There it is. Okay, so we have tourists, and from last time, we have facial piercings. So
sweet.
Definitely no bingos because we don't have a free space this time. It's getting harder. Yeah. It's getting harder.
Don't like that.
That brings us to You Can't Handle the Truth. Somebody said they were locked and loaded. Robin, was that you?
I don't think I should start.
Okay.
Yeah. I only have one thing, I believe. Abigail. I watched Abigail.
Still haven't.
Love it.
Great. I gotta go.
Like, it was funny. It was scary. It was interesting. It was a take, sort of, kind of, like, it's, I mean, it's not like a necessarily a new take, but it's like, you know, it's something different that we haven't, that doesn't keep regurgitating. Yeah. So I highly recommend that. And that little girl who plays Abigail, Alicia Weir, she is somebody to look out for, I think. I think it's going to be, because, like, not since Kirsten Dunst as Claudia in Interview have I seen a more, like, horrific and interesting child actor do, like, a vampire as well. And I think she's going to be, like, on that Natalie Portman trajectory. Mm-hmm. Like, this little girl has got it. And if I were her parents, I'd be scared.
that's a good cast. Isn't Melissa Melissa, I got kicked out of Scream for having opinions in that movie?
Yeah, she's also, everybody is great in it.
Yeah.
And I even, I'm just now realizing that I really enjoy Catherine Newton.
Yeah,
she's very good. Yeah, every time I see her, her performances are very, she delivers every time.
Yeah.
And every time I see her, it's like, yeah, you know, all right, I can rock with you. Like,
yes,
I am an official fan of yours. And yeah, everybody is great in this movie, except for there's some dude. I don't know why he's there, but he's like Whack Miller. Angus Cloud is his name, his real name. But also Juan Carlos Esposito is always very very nice to see on screen. And the other thing I watched was Talk to Me.
The spooky one.
Yeah.
Yes. With the hand.
Yeah.
Okay. There's a movie that came out around the same time as Talk to Me that I can't remember which is which, and I don't remember what that is now.
This is where they grab the hand and then they go all, they see dead people.
Okay. What'd you think?
Worst TikTok challenge ever. I think that, like, it was a good movie. I liked it because, again, like, it's something different. Mm-hmm. But it's like, the one thing that was, like, really bugging me is that, oh, we just accept that we have this possessed hand and we could just go ahead and we're just fucking around with possession on a regular basis on a Saturday night. This is just what we do.
Part of that was I had very, very high expectations. I was like walking in like, this is going to be the one. And that's never the way to walk in. But part of it was like, it's pretty brutal. It's pretty like smashing up these kids in very graphic fashion. And eventually I just kind of felt bad.
Yeah.
A lot of people liked it a lot more than me. I feel like I should revisit sometime.
Yeah. I mean, I did enjoy it. I think I gave it like 3.5 stars on Letterboxd. And also, I guess, you know, the brutality, it's Australian. So it's like something that we're not necessarily going
to. Australian horror movies, man.
Yeah. It does stick with you also. And because it's not like, you know, the ending is not like a happy go lucky situation. Like, it's kind of bleak. But I would recommend it.
I saw The Fall Guy. It's delightful.
I just bought it on sight unseen.
You'll be glad you did. It's the Ryan Gosling is good at everything.
Yes, he is.
I mean, he's better at this and Barbie. He's better in, like,
goofy
comedy, but I'm still handsome and dashing, than he is at moodiness.
Yes, I agree.
But he's really good at this, and it's just like a good, fun action movie that's like just the right amount of over the top so that you can just suspend disbelief a little bit. The whole cast is great. Winston Duke is great.
Love it.
I love him.
Me too.
It's really a shame that more people didn't see that. I'm trying to stop hand-wringing over what makes money and what doesn't because it's such a weird time.
But it's so surprising to me that this didn't get a lot of people in the theater.
I am personally offended that more people are seeing Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. And Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes got better reviews. Well, Fall Guy got good reviews. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes got I feel like I'm the one yelling the Emperor Has No Clothes about the Planet of the Apes movies, and I don't understand why. But yeah, Fall Guy is great. It's a great in-theater experience because it is loud and big, but it's because it's not doing too well. You can get it at home right now, so just get it at home. If you want to take your kids to a thing. The movie If, was that unclear?
Yes, that really was.
There's another Letterboxd. There's another Letterboxd list I looked at with Yes Man that was movie titles that are really annoying to say in conversation. And
they were very, those are terrible ones to say in conversation.
In the film, If stands for imaginary friend. In reality, it stands for it's fine. It's just kind of there. It's the interesting thing about it is I don't think this is aimed at children. I think that this is aimed at adults who want to show something heartwarming and meaningful to their children.
That sounds right.
Because it's not silly enough. It's not silly, high energy, wacky enough for kids. It's a little like wistful and sadness and memory and growing up. And I don't actually think kids love those movies.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, they've got nothing to be nostalgic about yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this is Ryan Reynolds.
Ryan Reynolds is in it. John Krasinski is also in it. There's a million ridiculously famous people who do voice roles as the ifs, including the old teddy bear, the old wise teddy bear if is the voice of Lou Gossett Jr. And the film is dedicated to his memory. But that's why I had to look up. It is not the shortest number one movie in America title of all time. That would be Z.
Possibly Zed.
Yeah, but that's still, the title is just the
right.
One.
What is Z?
It's a Best Picture nominee directed by Costa Gavras in 1969.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I have fallen asleep during it many, many times, and I have never finished it.
Just keeps trying.
Rest in peace to Roger Corman. 98 years is a pretty good run. But I watched Targets. I watched the Roger Corman produced movie Targets from 1968. It's Peter Bogdanovich's first movie. And in very Roger Corman fashion, the setup was, okay, listen, Boris Karloff owes me 2 days of filming. Write something that you can get what you need from him in 2 days, reuse some footage from the other thing I made with Boris Karloff, and then write whatever story around it you want. It succeeded so far beyond. Boris Karloff plays himself. He plays an aging horror guy who is thinking about leaving Hollywood, but he agrees to make this final personal appearance at the opening of a drive-in. Meanwhile,
this is like Ed Wood.
A little bit, but then the other story is a very normal looking suburban guy getting ready to go on a shooting rampage and kill his family and everything. And like he ends up at the drive-in and those two stories converge. Mm. It's so good. I was expecting like this will be a little oddity. It's so good. Watch Targets. And finally, I went to the Christmas Story house.
And was it everything you ever dreamed it would be?
It was more because I liked it and I'm not that crazy about the movie A Christmas Story. We've done the Christmas
That's
Story
right,
episode
yeah.
and we were all kind of like, meh.
I was the most Christmas Story pilled. Yeah.
It's the vibes are immaculate. So if you go to the house, all vibes. It's like, yeah, see right there? That's where she couldn't put his arms down in the suit. And if we go into the backyard, that's where he fought off Black Bart. And the house is really nice. They've set it all up to look like, you know, there's all these little sets and you can take all the pictures you want. And there's a museum where they have a lot of the costumes and one of the original BB guns and everything. And bigger than both of those spaces combined is the gift shop. This is one of the most impressive gift shops I've ever seen. There is so much Christmas Story stuff, and then if you go over there, they're like, yes, there's an Elf section, there's a Nightmare Before Christmas section, there's a Christmas Vacation section, whatever your favorite is, we have some stuff. But then also, like, you can buy the exact BB gun, you can buy the exact leg lamp, you can buy a bunny suit, you can buy Ovaltine. Like, if they can sell it and tie it in, they're selling it.
This is in Cleveland?
Yeah, the house is in Cleveland. A lot of the external stuff was filmed in Cleveland. Mm. They did some stuff in Canada, but it's a good tour.
Nice.
Yeah. Robin?
I have achieved heretofore unprecedented saving it for the pod.
Oh, my.
Because I watched Twin Peaks The Return.
Oh, my God.
Sean just in the damn past fell 2 weeks. Yes.
It's 18 hours long.
I know. And let me tell you, that's a TV show.
I still think it's a movie. Anyway.
Okay, wait, let me talk to you about why it's a TV show. Because everyone I know who loves this to pieces watched it in the summer of 2017. Mm-hmm. And part of loving it was spending a week talking about rewatching, dissecting each beat.
That's the best argument for it being a TV show.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's not a movie.
I like saying it's a movie because it's fun to be obstinate, and I love that it won the Sight and Sound poll, whatever year that was. But yeah, it's 18 parts of a thing.
Yeah, and also, like, it is worse if you think of it as a movie, right? Because then it's right. Like this movie achieves its undeniable artistic peak 40% of the way in.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, no.
What did you think?
I liked it a lot, obviously. Yeah. Like, it's great. I wish I watched it then.
Yeah.
It's hard. And like, actually, like, I got like really emotional when I watched the last episode last night because I was like, part of what I'm experiencing right now is regret about a different life where I appreciate I watched this when I should have, but you can't have a different life.
That night, like, that was bad for me, though.
That last episode?
Yeah.
For that reason, or because spoilers for a 6-7 year old thing, like, it does not give you a neat resolution.
It's weird and unsatisfying, which, what were we expecting?
Exactly.
But, and it helped that it was actually the last two episodes aired on the same night.
I know, and I watched it that way on purpose. Right.
And a lot happens in episode 17.
Yeah, it's a TV show.
Yeah.
The second to last episode of so many series is their best actual finale.
Yes.
It's not their best episode, but it is where the series could have beautifully ended.
Right.
But they felt like they had more important threads for the last one to tie up.
I remember the week leading up to that having nightmares because I was like, I don't know where this is going and I'm afraid it's going to not make me happy. And I didn't have nightmares about the plot. I had nightmares about watching the show and being unhappy.
That's
so sad, Sean. And then when I was sitting there at Mike and Abby's house, especially in that episode 18, for like that good 20 minutes where they're in the car not saying anything, I'm like, the odds of this going somewhere that makes me happy are so low at this point. I mean, all this said, of course I love Twin Peaks: The Return. And like, the farther I get from it, the more I love it and the more I can go back and appreciate the ways in which it was unexpected and weird and didn't just give us, like, toss us the nostalgia bait we wanted, which made the few moments where it did more impactful. When they're like, you know what, Norma and Big Ed are together.
I like that.
Oh,
I like that. I felt less enthusiastic, but ultimately had a Stockholm syndrome like acceptance of the normal gossip sequences at the end of every episode at the Roadhouse, where it's like they just have a musical performance and then they have characters who have nothing to do with anything else talk about unseen characters.
Interesting. Mm-hmm.
It doesn't happen every episode, but it happens
enough.
More than half the time.
And the most unexpected aspect of the whole thing is in those sequences Robin's talking about, they had bands on. Like, they just had normal bands show up and play like we were watching late night. Like, Eddie Vedder is that in one episode. Nine Inch Nails are in one episode. Like, it's delightful and it's weird. And like, the stuff that made me unhappy at the, like, if you were going along with it and watching every week, one of the big complaints was like, this isn't the Cooper that I want. But like, in retrospect, it's like, man, Dougie Jones is a lot of fun.
I would watch the sitcom about Dougie Jones. And I think that I did exactly the right thing. Thank you, Mike Rubino, for telling me this. I did not rewatch the original series before this, but I did watch for the first time Fire Walk With Me.
Oh.
And so that really is the right primer for like, this is going to be sad and bleak and not a lot of Coop.
Yeah. It's both not Coop and not Coop in the way Robin has her made up word Coop. What do you think of Fire Walk With Me?
I felt like I've never seen Funny Games, but I assume that's the vibe of Funny Games. How dare you have had fun?
Fire Walk With Me reminds me a lot of Jordan Peele's Us, in that they are movies that the first time I was like, bit of a mess, but I appreciate it. And every subsequent time I'm like, this is perfect. A little bit more. Is a movie good if you need seven viewings to really like get into it? Not necessarily, but Firewalk with Me works that way.
I only had the one viewing, and my full read of it was that he was like, yeah, that fun, quirky show that you all liked was about child rape. Deal with it.
What?
It is
Camila, God bless you for sitting through this.
It is a, you know, quote unquote, meditation on violence.
Yeah.
For sure. But now go watch The Missing Pieces, which is like a second feature length film of the outtakes of the cutscenes stitched together. Mm. And that has most of the quirk. So it was apparently edited down to being a bleak, devastating thing.
I see. Okay.
But Twin Peaks is a bottomless well of rewatching.
Regarding The Return, I also wanted to say a little bit too much David Lynch on screen for me. Kind of. At some point I was like, hey, bud, we get it.
He really likes hanging out in Twin Peaks.
Yes.
Not just making Twin Peaks.
But I did appreciate him. And the hardest part of not telling you that I was watching this was that I couldn't say fix your heart or die when we unfortunately had to have a conversation about people being jagoffs about pronouns.
I considered saying it in the room.
I encourage you to say that in the room.
I have a pin that says fix your hearts or die.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What does Hemlock House have to do with Twin Peaks?
It is a Twin Peaks inspired bar, and I still have not been there.
Yeah, I know that, but what does it have to do? Like
the phrase Hemlock House?
Yeah, does that have anything to do with Twin Peaks?
Nothing in particular.
So it's just some guy who likes Twin Peaks was like, I'm going to have this bar that, I mean, we just went there the other night, and there's just like random Twin, it's not even really like a Twin Peaks bar either. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
It's just the feels.
I guess.
Yeah.
There's pictures on the wall.
I'd have to go to weigh like, in. I keep trying to make a reservation.
My space is a Walking Dead inspired room.
It is. It counts. Anything else? Anything non-David Lynch related?
I'll send you a million more texts about The Return, but no, that was 18 hours of watching things.
Yeah,
that'll do it. That'll take up all of the time.
Mm-hmm. Harry Dean Stanton's so good.
There are a lot of dead people on that show for a show that's only 7 years old.
A lot of them died like immediately.
Well, some of them were already dead.
Miguel Ferrer had died before it came out.
Does Lynch have an alibi?
I mean, I was like, is this a heavy metal situation?
Yeah.
Like, but a lot of them were very old and or already had cancer.
That was the other frustrating thing watching it in real time. Like, there were enough, oh my God, it's blank, that every week you were like, there's a chance that Michael Ontkean is actually going to show up. There's a chance.
God bless him. I said I was retired and I meant it.
Because he's in Hawaii. Like, it's now a big thing to come back for anything. So I'm not leaving here. I'm like, is Piper Laurie going to show up thinking every week? And the answer is no. And up to and including, I was like, I am sure they filmed something with David Bowie.
What?
It would have worked. Like, David Bowie was still alive when they were filming that.
Oh,
and
really?
There's like seven episodes where they were like, we have nearly found Philip Jeffries.
Yeah.
And so I was just like, we're going to cut to David Bowie. It is going to happen. And then, spoilers, he's a giant talking teapot.
Yeah.
With a vaguely David Bowie-ish. We need to stop. We're sitting in a hot room.
Welcome to the Twin Peaks podcast.
Thank your local podcaster, by the way. Whenever they record in the summer.
Oh, God, yeah.
We typically have to turn off the AC to do it.
Mm-hmm. And then change our clothes after we're done recording.
Correct. So all you listening in a nice air-conditioned space, we are hot.
So let's draw a movie. I believe there are no vetoes in play.
There's the three-turn Beyonce veto, if that has come out on home video.
It hasn't.
Oh, my God. Is it ever going to?
What are we doing, B? Come on.
I think she's, like, waiting for the right deal, you know? I think she's waiting for the favorable terms. So, instead, we will watch Alice in Wonderland. Not the one with Johnny Depp. The cartoon.
That'll be interesting.
There are so many versions of this. Oh, no, this is not the one.
Uh-oh.
Oh, dun, dun, dun.
What the
Plot
hell?
Twist.
What is this?
What year was it?
So much more research is necessary. What is on our list? Yes, the 2010 Alice in Wonderland with Johnny Depp is on our list. There is also a movie called the Alice in Wonderland from 1976. That's not the cartoon.
No, the cartoon's from the 50s.
Yes, the Disney one is from 1951. What comes up when I type in Alice in Wonderland 1976 is...
What the hell is this?
Alice in Wonderland is a 1976 American erotic musical comedy. For the listeners, we briefly believed we had drawn Disney's Alice in Wonderland, the 50s cartoon. Then it turned out that we drew a weird, erotic 70s Alice in Wonderland parody that briefly went to number one. It was an Argentinian film. Andy Warhol was into it. It played like in Times Square in the 70s and just like on a weird sleepy week is considered to have been number one.
It doesn't seem easy to find. And if you do find it, you're going to end up with on a list or with a virus.
When Vinegar Syndrome or Severin Films puts that out in a sparkling 4K edition, we'll do that. We'll have a double 2 weeks in a row. We'll do Beyonce's Renaissance and this 1976 Alice in Wonderland porno whenever we are able to do so. But failing that, we will instead watch The Possession from 2012. One of those horror movies that could be any horror movie because they didn't get any farther than calling it The Possession.
Right.
It's got Sam Raimi's listed as a producer.
Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
Kira Sedgwick.
I think I saw this.
Modest Yahoo is in it for some reason.
Grant Show.
What's it about?
Sunflower farming.
Oh, it's about a Dybbuk box.
Excuse me? Yeah, I definitely saw this.
It's a box that in Jewish folklore can be used to confine and control a very powerful demon. And there's one at that haunted museum in Las Vegas. And Post Malone touched it and then had a car crash.
Okay. It's on Peacock.
There you go.
Cool.
The Possession.
So our husband should be very much interested in this. Speaking of possessed things. Have either of you ever heard of a story about a possessed doll named Robert?
No. Most of the possessed dolls I know are little girls.
He's in some museum in Massachusetts, I think. Hmm. And apparently, like, when you go to see him, like, I forget the whole story of, like, how he was possessed and all that stuff, or it's too much to get into right now. But you go to see him at the museum. You can take his picture, but you have to verbally ask for his opinion, for his permission. If you do not, then all this fucked up shit will happen to you. And I was listening to this girl tell her story about her experience with him on this podcast called Let's Not Meet. And she said that she took his picture. She was not respectful. She did not ask permission and talked about all this wicked stuff that happened to her after the fact and everything she had to do. So I had never heard of this doll before. And supposedly it's lore that's very well known.
See, I'm too prone to magical thinking like Jim Carrey, like in this.
Yeah,
I would not, you don't mess around with that stuff.
Nope.
Because even if it's not real, I'm going to convince myself it is real and throw myself down some stairs.
Yeah, don't go to that haunted museum though.
No, I will not.
There's one point where they're like, this bloody handprint is Charles Manson's handprint taken from paint from one of his prison cells left there. And if you want, you can press your hand against it and maybe his spirit.
No, what?
And I don't know if I was a little drunk or what, but I was like, in for a penny, in for a pound.
Jesus.
So maybe he's here with us right now.
Stop it.
I haven't had any particular trouble.
Shopping list. Holy water.
Sage.
I'm going to have to get some stuff here.
Rosaries. Well, before we're getting possessed with the demon thing because we aren't watching the Alice movie. That's the magical thinking that got Jim Carrey in trouble. Why, Tony? Because we didn't try hard enough to watch the erotic Alice in Wonderland. Whatever we're watching, Yes Man went to number one on the weekend of December the 19th, 2008. What was the number one song in America?
Alicia Keys.
No.
Or she's Alicia, isn't she?
Yeah.
Alicia Keys. No. Still no.
It's so hot in here, I forgot that I had to answer a question when you guessed a... Whatever her name is, it's not her.
Oh, that wasn't a hint. That
was no. Leona Lewis.
I kissed a girl.
No. There is a R&B singer, but it's a featuring, not the...
Apologize.
No. There's a female R&B singer as the featured artist, but it is not any of the people
oh,
you
boy,
have mentioned.
Oh, boy, that's going to be tough for me.
Not Alicia Keys. Jordan Sparks?
No. R&B artist is
Rihanna?
Too, yes. I was about to say, featured. I'm being too reductive in
with,
saying R&B.
What's his name? Neo?
No.
Maroon 5?
No.
Jason Derulo?
No.
Who hangs out with Rihanna?
Right. Katy Perry, apparently.
Eminem?
No.
That was a good one.
More of a hip-hop song than a pop song. Well, it's certainly a hip-hop artist as the main artist. So who featuring Rihanna? What rapper featuring Rihanna?
T.I.
Yes.
Live Your Life.
Live Your Life.
Good one.
I'm not going to try to be funny to leave. It's hot. And I'm confused. I'm confused about the Alice in Wonderland movie. I'm thinking about Twin Peaks The Return again.
Was that just a shared fever dream from all of us just now? The Alice in Wonderland movie.
There was no movie. It was never on the list. It never happened.
Put the air conditioner back on. Number one.